Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your information from us.
On the Fan, 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Get back to the calls in just a moment. Couple things, BT, from the coaching carousel. Number one, did you see Liam Cohen, the Bucks offensive coordinator, took himself out of the running for the Jaguars job?
Yeah, I saw it.
So that is telling about the Jaguars position. You know, you would think that it would be appealing because Trevor Lawrence is there. There are some pieces in place. They got the stud wide receiver. You're thinking, you know, all right, maybe Jacksonville could be a good destination, but it must speak to the dysfunction of the owner and Shad Khan. I've interviewed Tony Khan before. We had him in studio here, and he seemed like a nice enough guy, but obviously his father, the way that things have been run there. Now, they take a chance with Urban Meyer or former Super Bowl winning head coach and Doug Peterson hasn't worked out. You'd think it would be appealing. Apparently not if Liam Cohen is backing out to go back to the Bucs. He's not going to be paid probably the most for an offensive coordinator in the league, but still not taking the head coaching job.
Yeah, I mean, this is all about Trevor Lawrence. I mean, what did he sign, a five-year, $275 million deal before last season? And obviously, you look at the breakdown, you know, what's he actually getting that's guaranteed? I believe it's $200 million of that is guaranteed. So if you love Trevor Lawrence, you run to this job. If you like Trevor Lawrence, you probably still run to this job. If you're not sure about Trevor Lawrence, then you factor in, you know, the heaviness of the contract, well, then you probably run away from the job.
Yeah, so maybe it's less about ownership, or maybe it's a combination of ownership and Trevor Lawrence. But I can't imagine Trevor Lawrence being that bad of an opportunity for a first-time head coach or a guy that's looking to take over a head coaching job. Well, you have Lawrence in place. It could be a lot worse.
I hear you. I agree. It's probably a combination of things. I mean, and the ownership's been very, very sloppy out there. When were his I know they weren't great. What were his actual numbers last year? Lawrence.
He's been disappointing, obviously.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he got hurt again.
Yeah, still, don't you think a good offense, like the Giants would, I would assume the Giants would kill to be able to put themselves in a position where they had Trevor Lawrence with Brian. Like, you know, you would think of any, look, you look around the league, teams need a quarterback. Lawrence at least still has the potential.
He does. He does. You know, but I don't think that I just don't think he's a dog. I said that to you a couple of weeks ago. I don't think he's the kind of guy that the entire locker room follows. I'm not saying that they don't like him. I think he's probably a really nice person. Like, that might be a little bit of the problem. I don't know if he's got enough bite in him. I think that he is, you know, one of those guys who just is a little reluctant to kind of call it the way it is. And like a Brady, like a Favre, like a Rodgers, you know, like a Peyton back in the day, like those guys who aren't afraid to say what they got to say. And when you're a bad team trying to fight your way out of it and your quarterback's a little reluctant to take on that leadership role and he's not playing great, that's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, either way, it is telling that Cohen would turn them down and go stay in Tampa Bay at least for the time being. Two more things. Number one, I didn't catch this before, but I got a text from one of my buddies at SNY. He said, BT just said that one of the reasons he likes Glenn is because he's in shape. Did you say that? Because I missed that.
I did.
And then he went on to say, I don't care if he's a fat slob. I just want somebody who could coach. Rex was a fat pig his first two seasons. This is his words, not mine. Yeah. Chris Farina, nobody cares about the shape. And I missed that, but I would have challenged you had I heard that.
Yeah.
Man, Robert Saleh was in great shape. What does
that have to do with it? No, it doesn't have anything to do with it, provided the messaging and the resume and the other things that I deem to be important stack up. and they do stack up for Aaron Glenn. And one of the things,
so the combination.
Well, of course. I mean, the listen. If everything was the same,
well, Andy Reid is, you know, looks like a walrus on the sideline.
Of course, I think that, you know, when Aaron Glenn had that message the other day, and we played it for you on the show. It was a big piece of the podcast I did the other day. If you guys want to check it out on Killable, we've done about 22 or 23 now. We'll do another one this week. I played it for you guys there as well. And I think Aaron Glenn, I think it was kind of a gotcha question when he was asked about being a defensive coach. What do you say to those who position you as that? He's like, I'm a coach. Like, so if his answer was less than perfect, if I wasn't enamored or intrigued by some of his other characteristics, I don't think I would have said what he looks like.
I think it's
when you look great and you have the other stuff, it doesn't hurt.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing because in my mind, I'm like, what do I care what kind of shape the coach is in? Belichick, Parcells, like those are my favorite coaches ever. Andy Reid. But yet they're not in shape. Although there is something to be said, and you saw some from Giant fans, Nick Costos, I think it was calling, or Marash maybe calling Dable a little sloppy when he was sitting in the
Marash was getting on Dable?
Maybe it wasn't Marash, maybe it was Costos that was saying like he looked like a slob sitting there with his feet up in the meeting and, you know, whatever. Like, point is, if you're not winning, people are going to...
People start looking at the optics.
But I never looked at, Dable and said, oh, he's too fat to be a head coach.
No,
like, I don't
no
care
way.
About that stuff.
Me neither.
Although... The executive, Newmark here, where we were looking at his pictures yesterday. But for an executive, I feel like it's different than a head coach. I don't mind.
I think it's less important for an executive.
Why?
Because nobody sees you on game day.
Yeah, but
you're up in the suite.
You're supposed to be an executive. You're the one wearing the suit. You want to
wear a suit and you cover up the flab.
Yeah.
I prefer my coach to be, you know, a little firm.
Well,
I do.
You had one that looked like he could kick everybody's ass.
Problem is, he looked like Tarzan. He coached like Jane.
All right, last one here. Did you see any of the Ben Johnson? I know they played on the morning show earlier. Any of the Ben Johnson walking around the Bears building?
I did. It was on, I believe that was Twitter. It's everywhere. But I saw it. And I when he basically introduced himself and there was people up top, the whole building. Yeah, I saw it. Why, you didn't like it?
Yeah, I was getting a little bit, and Hoff brought this up before, and I guess Rami brought this up as well. Rami, our digital guy, like getting a little bit of Adam Gase vibes.
No, I didn't get that at all.
Okay.
Adam Gase.
I got a little bit of that. Like the brilliant offensive mind. I don't, you know how you're talking about Glenn? Leader of men.
That's what it feels to me.
I don't get that with Ben Johnson. However, when he addressed the media today, this quote won me over. Check this out. Go ahead, Hoff.
Modern football in the NFL is quarterback driven. That is no secret. You can look at analytics. Right now, quarterback success is a higher predictor of winning and losing than turnover ratio, which it's been for 20 plus years. Okay? That's changed. So... There's no doubt Caleb played a large component into my decision. He is a phenomenal talent that had, as many quarterbacks do, an up and down rookie year. Where I see my role is as a supporter of him. This offense will be calibrated with him in mind. We're going to build this thing. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope. We're ripping this thing down to the studs, and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost, and then with the pieces around him next. I really look forward to challenging him and pushing him, as I said before, to continue to grow and develop.
Isn't that fantastic?
That last part was good. The other stuff I didn't really need, but the last part about, you know, forget about what we did in Detroit, basically.
Yeah.
No, it's a new playbook, you know, letter one, sentence one, paragraph one. It's about Caleb.
That's what
I
care about, because a lot of times we think, okay, well, Ben Johnson's offensive scheme, he's going to take that and bring it elsewhere. He's so smart. And we've seen a lot of times where coaches force their way on their players, which is just not the right thing to do. He's starting from scratch, going there with a quarterback who's now going to be in year two, but year one of his system.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even his system. It's that theory, but ripping it down to the studs and building it up to placate his star quarterback. I love that from
Ben
Johnson.
That was pretty good. It's also a lot easier to say it than to actually do it, but I do believe he's going to certainly try to do it. Hey, listen, anytime we talk about coaching, and I use the word adaptability often because I think that is so vital, and you probably know where I'm going if you listen to me and Sal for a while, even me and Tiki back in the day, because I've used it for well over a decade. To me, Pat Riley. If Pat Riley tried to win with the Knicks the way he won with the Lakers when they were running teams out of the gym, scoring $1.30 like the Denver Nuggets were out there and some other teams in the souped-up Western Conference, the Knicks would not have had any success because they weren't built to run. Charles Oakley couldn't run. None of the guys could really run. At that point, Patrick wasn't going to be running a whole lot. So he slowed it down. He modified it to the roster that he had. And Bill Parcells did the same thing. Bill Parcells actually even more impressive than Pat because Bill Parcells basically deployed three totally different styles. With the Giants, it was ball control and defense, primarily linebackers, right? Protect the ball, gradually grind out 17, 20 points, bury you. Then he went to the Patriots. The defense wasn't as good. He had Drew Bledsoe sling it 55 times a game in certain spots, and he tried to outscore you because the defense wasn't ready yet. And with the Jets, it was a little mixture of everything where the defense was good but not great. The offense was good with Corbett and Keyshawn but not great and Curtis. So he just showed, again, amazing adaptability. Ben Johnson's on page one of trying to show that same adaptability, but it seems like he knows that he's got to try.
And I guess
it's a good start.
I guess my point is that I'd rather have that. Like, I think Glenn projects better leader of men, leader of an organization qualities than Ben Johnson in my limited time watching each.
Just on the visual?
Clips, yeah.
Okay, I agree
visual,
with that.
Visual, the clips, whatever. I would trust Glenn more in that regard.
But
the way the NFL has evolved. Now, again, the Jets don't have Caleb Williams in place the way that the Bears do, which is in part, if not the main reason why Ben Johnson went there. That, to me, structure with that offensive mind, who is open to ripping it down to the studs and building a playbook around his franchise quarterback, the potential there is far greater than just the quote-unquote leader of men, which is great. In theory, he's going to get guys to play hard, you'd hope, and hold them accountable, but like, how are you getting to the next level in an offensive game where you need a quarterback to win?
Well, nobody's disputing that. But now I'm going to go back to something I said to you the other day, and I'm going to ask you if you could ever see Ben Johnson doing this. And maybe the answer is yes, but not as effectively as Aaron Glenn. So I don't know what level of football Ben Johnson played. And you don't need to be a great player to be a coach. I'm not implying that here. But because most of the great coaches did not play at a high level, like Parcells and whatever. Pat Riley was a role player in the NBA, good player at Kentucky, but didn't do much in the NBA. You know what I mean. And even Torrey, some of the other guys, right? But I think when you look at somebody like Ben Johnson, okay, that sounds great. It sounds really good, and I believe it. But until I actually see, 27 touchdowns in the air and seven or eight on the ground and seven or eight turnovers, not a lot. Until it sticks, it doesn't stick. But I know this. When they're on the practice field, when Aaron Glenn takes his Jets job, he could talk to Garrett Wilson or even Davante Adams as a veteran or young corners, and we all know who they are. And he could say, hey, listen, here's how you do it. Can Ben Johnson do that? No, he can't. He could try,
right, so
but he can't apply what he learned because he didn't learn what Aaron Glenn learned because he didn't do it like Aaron Glenn did it.
But what would you rather have?
It depends.
That,
it
what depends. Glenn has, or the setup with Ben Johnson?
In theory, the offense, provided the offensive guy's the right guy, and he might be, but I also can make a very easy case for the guy who's been there, the guy who's been with multiple franchises, the guy and Sala wasn't the same this, when he was hired a couple years ago, who absolutely knows how imperative it is non-negotiable that the Jets construct a staff around Aaron Glenn that is going to elevate him and not hold them back, not get in his way. And it seems like Aaron Glenn is the first one to know that because he's basically said that.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that you brought up yesterday, I think is getting overlooked, especially from people like me who are saying, well, first-time head coach, defensive guy, wouldn't do that again. It's got to be a different formula that even if you do hire a first-time head coach like Glenn, who's primarily a defensive guy, if you have the right supporting staff around him, then maybe it makes it look a little bit bigger and better. And potentially, he could hire, let's say, Wilkes. Who knows where he's going to go for offensive coordinator? I mean, go get an experienced one who you trust. And also, you might have Aaron Rodgers in place. So that's already light years ahead of where the last regime, Douglas,
last couple of regimes.
Sala, yeah, that is true with the inexperience that they had. All right, the Mets have been a big theme as far as their lack of, I shouldn't say lack of offseason, but their offseason in comparison to certainly the Dodgers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where King Cohen maybe has not done enough. Joe was in Manhattan, wanted to talk about just that. What's up, Joe? Hey, Joe.
Hey,
BT and Sal.
Sorry,
yes.
I'm out.
You're out?
That's all right. No, go ahead, Joe. We got you. Go ahead, bud.
Sorry, I was
That's okay, Joe.
Office.
Go ahead.
If King Cohen really wants to be King Cohen, why can't he sign Alonzo and get Vlad, especially with Marte coming off the thing, off the contract, and he also can put Alonzo as DH when he gets a little older.
Well, Joe, hold on a sec, Joe. He could certainly get Alonzo, but he can't force Toronto to trade him there. So that's to answer the first part, because he doesn't control where Vlad goes right now.
True, but instead of unloading everybody right now for him, it looks like, as you guys said, Soto and Vlad have a connection with each other. You could wait down the road halfway through the season or maybe even after the season, just toss him all the money too.
See, and thank you for the call, Joe. I am not one, especially after they just got Soto, I'm not one to sit here and say, well, now go get this guy and that guy, and why couldn't you? But when you watch the Dodgers doing that very thing, then I do understand to a certain extent. I'm yelling and screaming, he's King Cohen, he's talking about, you know, we know how rich he is and the payroll and this and that. Now, he's being smart about it, which is good. Where the one constant is that Steve Cohen has been willing to overextend for the right fit, meaning younger player. They will go to whatever length to get that guy. They couldn't with Sasaki. Yamamoto turned it down. They would have with Ohtani, but he didn't want to. Like, and then, look, they even went over the top for Carlos Correa, who we thought was the missing piece. Luckily, that didn't turn out well. They just got Juan Soto. So, like, for me, I have a hard time being greedy. But to the caller's point, I don't think it's that much to ask BT why it couldn't be bring Pete back and then go get Guerrero. Where I don't think that's going to be realistic for the Mets, even if it is Pete at 368, although I don't know this to be factual. Let's say Pete came back at their price. Do you think that would take them out of play for Vlad? It shouldn't.
It should not. Otherwise, we wasted some energy on the limits and the power of Cohen.
Now, we've seen that with the Yankees, too, where they have limits, because I feel like with the
Yankees, but I think we acknowledge that more freely. We understand the Yankees' limits because Hal has shown a reluctance, even though he's always top three in payroll. That's not a new story. Nobody, at least for the last year or more like 3 or 4 years, where it's been us actually imploring Hal to go a little bit more, and it's been more of the acknowledgement like, well, it doesn't spend like his dad, whereas with Cohen, we all thought it was going to be more like a modern George.
So both have fallen short to a certain extent.
I'm not going to go nuts over it. They've both done enough.
But it kind of brings us back to the point that we started the show with, and that the Dodgers just keep going.
Yeah.
Pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
All gas, no brakes for the Dodgers. successfully.
Yeah.
And the Yankees had, in my mind, a very good offseason, all things considered, losing Juan Soto. Like,
definitely.
How do you recover from that?
Uh-huh.
But they could still do more. I'm one move away. Even at this point, I take Arenado.
Talking about for the Yankees.
Yeah. One move away from saying, okay,
A.
You nailed it.
A offseason.
You lost Soto.
Yeah.
You recovered as well as you possibly could. You built up a legit nasty bullpen.
Uh-huh.
You added the best starter for my money on the market that you could get with Max Fried.
Yep.
You balanced out the lineup. You put pieces back in places that they fit better. But I can't say that if they go into the season with DJ LeMahieu again at third base. Now, you may not love Bregman, and that's a different argument. Okay, fine, but where else are they getting that guy? And the same thing for the Mets. Like, hey, King Cohen, great job. You stole Juan Soto away from the Yankees. You needed a mega star.
Mm.
You did it. Okay, well, then what? We've said it even before they signed Soto. Like, they need a lot more. And what have they done?
Who was the Mets left fielder when they won the 1986 World Series?
Left fielder.
Mm-hmm. You know, Lenny was out in center with Mookie. They were doing their thing. Darryl out right.
Who was it? Danny Heap comes to mind.
Danny Heap was
a bench player.
More of a pinch hitter, but not really a lot of left field.
It was Mitchell.
Kevin Mitchell. I say this? It's kind of a trick question.
Yeah.
Because George Foster started the season.
Yes, I remember that.
As their left, then they got rid of him.
Yes.
He was a little grumpy or whatever.
He wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy. Then they brought in Lee Mazzilli.
Yeah, oh, Maz, right.
Okay, so I say that, and at that point, Lee was not, you know, he was certainly much more of a diminished player, but...
Those are all part-time kind of guys.
Yeah, left field was a bit of a revolving door. Mitchell spent some time out there, but what they really should have done is just put, like, Lenny in left and Mookie in center or whatever.
Right.
They didn't do that. The point is, it's not necessarily the way you start. Maybe fans don't want to hear that. It's how you adjust to what the season presents to you, and I think one of the harder things to do is when you have all these resources is to show restraint. I think the easiest thing to do is pick them up, sign them. That's the old, you know,
pick them up.
Okay, but if you pick up too many of the wrong people, when there's somebody on the side of the road that you really want, guess what? You might not be able to do it. So, yeah, it's a little less than after the amazing A-plus ridiculous start to the offseason with Soto, but it ain't over yet.
Yeah,
not over yet.
The Dodgers just keep going.
Well, the Dodgers keep going, but also, Sal, have the Phillies done anything?
Like, if the Mets...
Have the Braves done anything besides get some guys back? They lost half their rotation.
I'm not as worried.
What are the other teams in baseball doing in the National League?
Yeah, I'm not as worried as those teams. And by the way...
They're in your division.
I know, but still, like, they were in the division last year. Nobody thought the Mets would even come close to them. They ended up getting in the playoffs and beat the Braves on their way there, beat the Phillies while they were there.
But that's not even my point. Yeah. My point is... The Mets aren't the only ones taking a bit of a prudent route, and I don't think that that's a bad thing right now.
I know that. I still think the Dodgers can be beat and will be beat by somebody, and I'm not even saying go get this guy and that guy, like Alonso Emblatt. I just, you know, they easily could have beefed up that bullpen, and you'd be like, okay, well, at least they got a super pen to try to offset maybe some of the rotation deficiencies, a lineup deficiencies. They're like, they're slowly upgrading. And I'm impatient. I'll be honest with you.
I understand why.
We'll get to the Hall of Fame stuff. Yeah, we haven't gotten the Hall of Fame stuff conversation going yet today. I want to do that when we come back and continue with the calls. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
BT and Sal back on the Fan. Get back to your phone calls in just a second here. We haven't talked about the Hall of Fame yet, BT. And we did it yesterday, had some fun with it. We had Tom Verducci on. We filled out our ballot, which was not that dissimilar. I had Felix Hernandez getting in and no Sabathia. You had Sabathia and no King Felix. Sabathia did, in fact, get in. So CeCe, Ichiro, and Billy Wagner get in. Here's my issues with the voting process and the voters. Like, I love this stuff. I love talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's such bullcrap. And the voters are pathetic. Not all of them. And I'm friends with a lot of them and work with a lot of them. Like, But how do we get to a point where Billy Wagner, for 9 years, wasn't a Hall of Famer? Last year on the ballot, he's a Hall of Famer. That makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. How is Carlos Beltran not a Hall of Famer? And forget about the cheating scandal. Like, that's bullcrap. It's year three. Beltran is a Hall of Famer. One of the great players, no doubt about it. Switch hitter, all that stuff. Postseason, he should be a Hall of Famer. And then the coup de grace, the nail in the coffin. How is it possible that one bleeping voter yet again didn't vote for Ichiro? Like, who in this world ever watched baseball and wouldn't think that Jeter or Ichiro would be a Hall of Famer?
Or Seaver. Did we ever find out who the person was, by the way? Has he revealed himself? Has he stepped forward?
I don't think yet we've had that.
Come clean, buddy.
Did we have it with Jeter?
Pay your penance. I think he did come clean with Derek.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. You see my point here?
I do. Honestly, I gave up not caring about the Hall of Fame because I love baseball. You know that. I love the Hall of Fame. I love the numbers. I actually have something for each where I think you'll find interesting after. But it is so all over the map without consistency. And there is something to be said for that incremental tick up. That's why, what was Beltran, 70%?
I think so, right? 70-point change.
You know he's going to get it next year.
Okay.
And, you know, when it's a little lighter, what about Andrew Jones? I know Chipper Jones was tweeting away from last night, basically saying if Andrew was a Yankee and he had 1,300 RBIs and 10 or 11, 12, 13 gold gloves, he'd be in.
He's probably right.
He might be. There's a lot of, although Mattingly's not in, so it's not just a Yankee bias, and A-Rod's not in, but that's a steroid thing. But he's probably right, and I think that Andrew Jones should probably be in as well. I think that...
You wouldn't have voted for him, and neither would I, for the record.
For who?
Andrew Jones.
We did not. But I'm saying if he gets in at some point, it's not going to bother me.
It's the whole of, hey, he was really good at certain points.
Well, that's why I can't feign energy. I can't feign, like, anger. you know, pertaining to sports, obviously. But I can't manufacture that stuff if the people who are in charge of it don't care as much. Why should I care as much?
I know. It just bothers the crap out of me, dude. And even to the point where, and Sabathia seems like a great dude. Congratulations to him getting in the Hall of Fame. But CC Sabathia can say he is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
That does not add up to the other guys who had to wait certain time frame to get in for whatever reason. Even Beltran, just use him with Carlos. Like, Carlos Beltran should be a Hall of Famer. Also, I don't think there should be such thing as a first ballot Hall of Famer. I believe when you're eligible, you should be on the ballot. You either get voted in or you don't. That's it. He's a Hall of Famer.
You get 1 year?
Yeah, like he should be a Hall of Famer. What changed? Billy Wagner didn't take the mound in the last 10 years. So what changed?
Well, a couple things did change, just to push back and to have a conversation from the other side. Though I'm largely with you. I think the reason why you wouldn't want to do that, where it's like, all right, you're on the ballot, you're either in this year or you're not. Yeah, bottom line, I know who I could X out immediately without giving a whole lot of thought. Now, maybe a couple of guys like Felix or CC, I just want to dive into the numbers a little bit, which I did yesterday before I gave you my ballot. But you do that because what if there is a scandal that's uncovered after the fact? The reliance and the development of different analytics. Like, I do like having a grace period just for almost retroactive retroactive evaluation. I don't think it's a bad tool. But if you wanted to do it, you just said and have, all right, here's the ballot, X or no, you're in or you're not. And then maybe have every couple of years, like a veterans committee, to maybe write something that is a gross injustice, almost like a do-over button, like a reset, just kind of flip it if it's agreed upon by X amount of people, however they want to determine it. I'd be okay with that as well. It's just, it changed about Harold Baines, Don Sutton, Burt Blylevin. Come on. I watched Burt. I remember watching those really good Yankee offensive teams with Mattingly, that team. Younger Mattingly. Pitching, and Burt Blylevin pitched in the 70s, way before our time. But I'm like, they're going to smack this guy. All right, he's got a good curveball. Fantastic. Like, I never once watched Burt Blylevin and, like, viewed him like I watched the young Dwight Gooden or Fernando Young or Nolan Ryan or Steve Carlton, even though I saw Steve kind of more at the end, like or Greg Maddux or Randy Johnson or Pedro. Not even close, dude. Not Roger Clemens. Not even close.
Yeah, Scott Rolen in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly.
Never once did I watch Scott Rolen. Now think about that. Scott Rolen is in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Carlos Beltran is not. There are more egregious ones, obviously, than just that, but like, Scott Rolen was a good player. I'm not trying to take it. Scott Rolen is in the Hall of Fame, as is Chipper Jones. So what's the delineation between Chipper Jones, who was a all-time great performer,
switch hitter, too.
But they're both in all. How do you differentiate? Like, to me, it should only be the cream of the crop, the elite.
Me too.
I know it's not like that, but it's a reminder every single year of how stupid the whole thing is. And it's frustrating to me because they continue to get it wrong and make it about things that are other than the player's performance at an extremely high dominant level on the field.
Listen, you and I share a lot of the same concepts about the Hall of Fame. We're basically the same age. We saw the same players. So we're pretty like-minded here. I want to throw something real fast at you with Ichiro real quick, okay? So when you talk about the history of baseball, it's very easy to say, you know, we'll never see another 300-game winner or, you know, certain stats that are almost unachievable based on how little players play compared to back in the day. All right? And that's statistically provable, right? Let me give you the converse of that. I think somebody like Ichiro, because nobody talks about the accumulation of hits, I don't think we'll ever see another Ichiro. I was just doing some very basic, very basic math. So we all know at this point it came up at the age of 27.
Yeah.
And you look at the first 7, 8, 9, more than 7 years of his career, 260 hits. Like George Sisler broke his record, 240, 238. Like just like Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn, Rod Carew, stupid numbers, right? If Ichiro, think about this. If he would have come up at the age of, I'm going to be conservative, not 18, 19, 20, at the age of 22, and instead of averaging 220 hits like he did for the first 7, 8, 9 years, we'll give him 200 hits. You know, that's another 1,200 hits. He's over. He's basically at 4,300. And when you factor, because there's very few guys now that get a lot of hits here. Luis Arraez, and nobody wants him.
Yeah.
Basically, he doesn't run. He doesn't have a rocket. He's not a good defender. Like, Ichiro, to me, is really one of the most unique, and I don't know that we'll see something like this again. A dude cranking out 220 hits a year with a Roberto Clemente arm in right field, which he had, and basically a Ricky Henderson-light stealing bases in his prime. I don't know if that guy's ever created again.
See, I love that, the fact that Ichiro was better than anybody else at what he did, which
was
an absolute hit machine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years led the league in hits. I mean, that is...
And he started at the age of 27. So that's prime years he left on the table.
I get it. I know that. Well, I mean, that's why... How could you not... Like, how could the whole thing is so infuriating and so flawed. Just simplify. How could anybody who's watched baseball, who has a vote for baseball, not vote Ichiro for the Hall of Fame? The answer is that that person, whoever it is, that remains unnamed at the moment,
mm-hmm.
is going to say, well, I didn't think he should be unanimous.
Yeah, yeah. Who the hell are you
to render
that verdict?
It's the same thing for Derek Jeter. And by the way, even worse for Ichiro. I still think Jeter should have been obviously unanimous, but like Ichiro, even better, you would argue, for what he did.
And postseason exploits, Derek, all the championships,
still,
middle
of
the diamond. I mean, I don't even want to have that argument
anyway,
now, but I could push back on
but
that.
The point is, anyway, like neither of those guys should have had any votes other than, yes, he's a Hall of Famer.
I know.
And yet
same with
don't.
Tom Seaver.
So then
who watched Tom Seaver pitch and said, no, I can't vote for him this year?
It's ridiculous. That's
Come
what
on,
so why
dude.
Can I take it seriously? And the voters change over time.
Yes.
So and it still remains the same nonsense where these voters at times think that...
Well, is it the same nonsense or is there more nonsense? And I remember when I was young, I'd hear a lot about like, oh, Tony will leave and eventually got in, should be in, and... Tony, maybe Tony Perez from the Big Red Machine or Gil Hodges should be in.
Yeah.
Like, there were always protests back, but I think there's more. Like, every year, there's two or three things to contest. Why did this guy get this vote? Why is he in with this volume of votes? Why did he not get in?
Yeah.
Why did he get in year three?
Yeah, and why is he waiting?
It's confusing. By the way, have you ever been to the Hall of Fame?
Yes, multiple times.
You have? When was the last time you went?
2014, I want to say.
That's a lot more recent than me.
Yeah.
I haven't been there since about 97, 98. Mm. Been a while. What'd you go for?
I went as a kid a long time ago.
Yeah, me too.
Probably the year that Joe Morgan and Jim Palmer got in. I want to say 1990.
Okay.
Is when I went as a kid for the first time.
Your parents took you?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I went on a little family trip to Niagara Falls, Cooperstown.
Yeah.
It was great. And, you know, as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old kid,
it's fantastic,
like,
dude.
Heaven on earth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cooperstown.
Get a couple Slurpees, you're good to go. That's all you need.
That's all I need. And then I've been back a couple of times since. I went back to actually play in a tournament with one of my uncles. We played on Doubleday Field.
I didn't know you. I played. I did not know you played on that field.
Yeah, loved it.
That's
dugouts
awesome.
Were sick.
It was like a little Wrigley Field, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
That was awesome.
And then
I didn't know you played there. Good job.
Most recently, one of my friends got married in 2014 in Cooperstown.
Okay.
So then we went.
Was the bachelor parties in Cooperstown when he go to take pictures next to the
Tycom
statue?
His wife is from there.
Got it.
So he got married there, but
we,
you know, as the group of people who commuted to go there, made a thing of it, go to the
Very
Hall
cool.
of Fame.
Very cool. So, I got to get back. I got to take my kids there.
You've never taken Colt, huh?
No. That's coming soon.
That should be high
Very
on
soon.
Stan is in West Orange. What's up, Stan?
Hey, guys. Hey, I couldn't agree with you more about some of the things that you said over the last couple of minutes. By the way, just to let you know, I listen with you every day. And to tell you the truth, I don't call in, but this was something that I had to do.
Yeah, okay.
How do you take away 10 years of one of the best shortstops besides Derek Jeter and not... And Chase certainly gets a better rating as far as votes are concerned than Jimmy Rollins. Rollins is top 20 all time in seven offensive categories,
mm-hmm.
and he's top 20 defensively category wise for an entire career.
Well, Stan, aren't these the inconsistencies that me and Sal were talking about that just drive you nuts? They're so random.
Well, like I said, it's incredible. Beltran, no question, he should have been in. Billy Wagner, how do you turn around? Billy Wagner didn't get Houston to the World Series. He didn't get the Phillies to the World Series. He didn't get the Mets in the World.
Yeah, but he was still a great.
Yeah, but that's not fair.
He was still a great relief pitcher, Stan, Billy Wagner. And by the way, they made him wait 10 freaking years, which is ridiculous. He's better than Lee Smith.
Well, you know what? Okay, fine. I'll go along with that only because of the fact that you're right in that respect. But every time, it was funny. You can't take that away from Trevor Hoffman, but you know what happened with Trevor Hoffman, too.
Yeah, I think Wagner was better, and thank you for the call, Stan. And this is why I do love the conversation, BT, but it's so frustrating because it continues to be wrong, and we could yell and scream about it as we do once a year.
Yeah.
It's a fun conversation, fun debate to have, who we would put in, who shouldn't be in, why is this guy in, what about the percentages? But it's so fundamentally screwed up, it hurts me at my core as a diehard baseball fan.
But you just said something interesting. You said that we yell about it every year. Yeah, we do, but I yell less often, and I yell with less volume than I used to. Each year dissipates a little bit. It's not that my love for baseball is fading. If anything, with my kids, it's been sparked and it's grown even more, almost back to when I was a kid. I love baseball. I have actually fallen back in love with baseball. Because, you know, like, honestly, just nobody cares. But, like, the way when I stopped playing, I was so beat up. And I in my mind, I underachieved and I hated baseball. I didn't think it treated me right. Like, I put so much in and it really spit me out. And I've learned to forget that because I just wasn't good enough. But in real time, it hurt me.
Right.
So I always still watch the Yanks and the Mets. But I fell out of love with it. I've fallen back in love with it. But I just, this is not a fight that I really...
You can't win.
You can't win it, and I'm almost not even willing to fight it anymore because it's so without reward.
Yeah.
Like, we go in circles every year. It's the same conversation. The names are just different.
Right. No, you're right. It's already ruined. There's nothing we can do about it. I'll be honest with you. It makes me feel a little bit better yelling about it.
Me too with certain things.
Yes, like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, was I more angry about it?
Oh, sure. I was a lunatic back then.
But it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, and you're right. At some point, you just throw your hands up and say, who cares about it? And maybe we get to that point where we stop talking about it, even the once a year that it comes up. Maybe we do.
I don't think you and I will. Others will.
Well,
or could. We won't.
A lot of what we're discussing plays more to the older fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Colt or the younger, you know, even if you say you know, your son's what? He just turned 10?
Just turned 10.
Okay, right. So, all right, say between the ages of 10 and 30, do they give a crap about the Hall of Fame anymore?
That's a good question. I mean, I had such reverence for it when I was 10. I would say probably not. I think I would be untruthful if I said it's definitely not the same because he doesn't talk. Now, he watches baseball every night, but he doesn't talk about the Hall of Fame. No, I think the answer is there's been a drop-off.
Which means those of us who really
carry the torch, kind of
before it got destroyed, we're eventually going to move on.
That's true.
And the new crop, I don't think, is going to give as much of a crap.
You know what? That's
it.
A good point. That is a good point.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll finish up with your calls on the other side. 888-808-1019.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on the Fan.
Today's Call of the Day is brought to you by Volvo Cars Ramsey. Finding the Volvo you want is easy at Volvo Cars Ramsey. And by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. Throwing to an Aaron Glenn highlight, so much for that.
That is a Glenn highlight. Yeah. That's when he ran it back 108 yards on the kickoff. I remember watching that game in 98. Vanderjack tried it from 63. That was in Indianapolis. He fielded it right at midway through the end zone. And Brian Cox, remember him?
Yes, of course.
He actually cleaned the path up for Aaron Glenn the last 5 to 10 yards, and he took it back 108 to the house.
And the reason, 108. The reason why we were going to throw that highlight right there is because it is official. Adam Schefter tweeting just a little while ago, BT, a new coach in New York. The Jets are hiring former Lions defensive coordinator and former Jet Aaron Glenn as their new head coach.
I'm really happy. I'm really excited. I'm really enthused. It doesn't make any sense to make these bold predictions. Nobody cares. They mean nothing. What you do is you react to the hire, and my reaction is definitely a positive one. And now my focus is on, you know, I want to see how he comports himself at the press conference, though that's not always a sign that it's going to be good. But I hope it's a rock star home run of a presser.
Which I bet it will be.
I do, too. I bet a lot of former teammates, I wouldn't be surprised if Corbett or Vinny, some of these local guys, find their way back home. And go and support Aaron, who they both play with him for a while. And then it's the business of building a staff and lifting the Jets out of this nearly decade and a half abyss where they've been on this escalator to hell, and hopefully he's the one to get us off.
Well, now we'll find out, I would think, in the coming days, if not next week, about the quarterback situation. Here's why, and I'm not trying to rain on the parade. If you're a Jet fan, you have to be excited and you have to be hopeful beyond what even you may feel in your gut, like me. Like, in my gut, I don't think this is a bad hire. It's not the hire that I would have made. I don't think it's the best hire. And just to hammer home that point, Schefter followed up that initial tweet with this. And we know this, but just to again reiterate it. The Jets have now hired seven head coaches since the end of 2000. Aaron Glenn, now hired here, six of them have been first-time head coaches with defensive backgrounds. Herm, Mangini, Rex, Bowles, Saleh, and Glenn, the one exception, Adam Gase. That, I know, BT, it shouldn't mean anything.
I hear you. It's tough to
they're doing
not lump it all in.
The same friggin' thing.
It's close.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. I think the one difference is that it feels like from a talent base, more like when Mangini was coming in. More so than when Gase was coming in. Like, the talent base is elevated. You know, now we got to get the answers on Rodgers. I would almost guarantee that Glenn wants Aaron Rodgers to come back and be his quarterback. We'll get the answer to that soon. But listen, I get it. That's why, you know, I can only tell you, like, what's in my gut. Nobody knows. Even Woody, who signed off on this, he doesn't fully. Nobody really knows. Mike Tannenbaum and Spielman don't really, truly know. Just like the Giants didn't know when they elevated, what was he, a linebackers coach, and almost fired him after his first year when he won three or four games, Bill Parcells. They didn't know that they were basically taken out of the incubator, the two or three greatest coaches in the history of football.
Right.
You really don't know. Sometimes the elevation and sometimes the ascension comes from the most unlikely place. And if you told me a year ago, hey, by the way, in 2025, Aaron Glenn's going to be the head coach, I'd be like, what? And I followed his path. Aaron, like, okay, how do we get there? I don't know. I just hope it's the right one. And in my gut, it feels better than not.
And I do think, even though at my core, I don't like it because of those reasons, first-time defensive guy, Glenn should be set up better than a lot of the others, if not every one of the others, maybe outside of Rex, because of what's potentially in place. Also, it could have been worse. Like, if Woody hired Rex, that would have been a bad hire. There were worse moves to be made. I'll be rooting for him. He's got to root for. Look forward to when they have the press conference and all that. Still not the move that I would have made.
I got you. Hey, we'll keep talking about this tomorrow. Johnny's, let's go. Enjoy. Now, I will see you very quickly at the Garden tonight. I got to go up there. They put us basically by the roof to do the games, which sucks.
Enjoy
at the
up there.
Yes, I won't see. Enjoy the floor. Bring us some luck tonight, all right? You and Hoff, you got your Johnny's gear on? Get on. You get on TV a lot tonight. Watch.
Really?
Guaranteed. Dude, you're on the court, man.
Better make sure I do my hair. All right, that does it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk about the Johnny's tonight. And whatever else, obviously more on Aaron Glenn and see what happens in the world of baseball as well. Thanks to Dove, thanks to Hop, thanks to everybody who listened and called. We appreciate each and every one of you. Evan and Tiki, they're coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m.